Hey, everybody, I'm Jody Vance.
Hey, I'm George Affleck.
And boy, we're going to take you hyper-local across the country with some good news, bad news maybe, and then good news, bad news in the U.S. and some bad news about measles. Oh, it's all on this edition of
Unspun.
George, why are you glad you're not in city council right now, today, as we sit here on the 13th of November?
Oy. So it's budget time. 650 speakers signed up. I think they're around 300. They got through 200 and something yesterday. So they're allowed to phone in now. When I was on council, you had to go, they had to be in person. And I think they only speak for like a minute or 2 minutes per speaker. But
then do the math on that.
It's a lot. It's a lot. It's enough to put off anybody to go into politics. I'll tell you that. Not that it's not important. It's
all
just
right.
A lot.
It's just a lot. But and is everything, do they listen to it? Like, Is it going to change? That's the ultimate question.
No, of course not. I don't think the budget will change that much. I saw Pete Fry asking some questions and saying, if I wanted to change that, how do I do that? And well, you can put an amendment. I mean, the thing is that I always found it challenging. When I was in office, you have these budgets, very complicated documents. Staff have put a lot of time into it. And then, you know, we're just going to make an amendment for, you know, an add a 5% or whatever. These are the kind of things that happened when I was there. So I would vote against these things. And there's that famous meme, Raymond Lulli going at it.
But right.
That was after Raymond threw a motion on the floor to add a whole bunch of money to the budget. I'm like, that's not cool. We have had zero consultation on that question that you threw in there and that point, and it doesn't matter if it's good or bad. If the public didn't have any clue it was coming, and it adds millions to the budget, that's not fair. It's not fair. Right. So what amendments can you make, good or bad, like cut or add, that are fair to the 650 people who lined up to speak to the budget? My opinion was always either you suck it and, you know, suck it up and vote for it, or vote against it and tell staff to come back with something closer to what you're hearing from the people that are speaking, or for whatever. And that's the process. And if you don't hold a majority, then yeah, you don't win. So that's the point of party politics. But certainly from my point of view, I think I voted against several budgets because of the massive 2 or 3% increase.
Right.
That was when inflation was zero. And I was like, nope.
Right. And that's the thing that spins my head around on Unspun. And I know there are a lot of people, like there are some people who tune into our podcast each week, and they understand the inner workings in a way, or they're, you know, policy wonks, whatever you want to call, you know, diving deep into what we talk about here. And then there are people who are trying to understand. It's so hard to understand. Like, is it this budget conversation? Like, we're zero. It's a zero budget. What does a zero budget mean? I mean, watch the park board, Laura Christensen yesterday on the news talking about, well, that'll just make everything at all the parks more expensive. It's just gonna, when you do a zero budget, we're just gonna have to find the money elsewhere. And it's like, my partner looked at me and goes, I thought we were getting rid of the park board. I'm like, yeah. He goes, how much is the park board costing us? And I'm like, good question. Nobody knows how much it costs to pick up garbage. Nobody knows how much it actually costs for policing. Nobody, like, and I'm talking about nobody being the people who actually pay for it. Mm-hmm. We don't know. Because this is all smoke and mirrors. It's going to be 15%. Oh, I got it to 9%, because a 9% increase in your property tax 4 years ago was outrageous to most people. But when they started at 18 or whatever it was, coming down to 9 felt like a win. It's such spin, George. Like, I honestly.
Here's two pieces of data that everybody should know and consider. The budget is 3 times larger now than it was in 2007, 3 times. So the question you have to ask yourself, and you're probably going to see some videos of me talking about this coming out of your social soon.
Okay.
You know, are you getting 3 times better? Is the city 3 times better? Are you getting 3 times better services? Are the streets 3 times better? Is crime 3 times worse, better? What is
worse? Everybody is screaming at their radio right now, or their TV, or their
exactly.
Going, it's way worse, George. Well, how is it costing us 3 times as much? And what can we do about
it? $500 million. The budget itself was only $700 million in 2007. So And then there's the staffing. So they're saying they're going to
say that again.
Staffing. Guess how many staff they've added in 3 years?
Hold on. Hold on. Go back to the policing budget, what it is now and what the whole budget, whole city budget was. Say that again.
In 2007, it was around, I think, 700, 800 million, somewhere in there.
Yeah.
So now the policing budget now is hitting 500 million, half a billion dollars. And then the staffing thing. So
yeah. How many staff?
They're going to cut 400. Guess how many staff they've added in 3 years? 750.
Yeah.
So it's a net gain since ABC been in office of 350.
Right.
These are the numbers that need to be known. These are the things that people should be thinking about when they're asking these politicians over the next year who are running, and there were a million of them running for mayor alone. What have you done for us? Show me the streets that are better. Show Granville Bridge, $59 million, please.
We got a bench. We got a couple benches with speed bumps leading up to them.
Which are basically tourist jokes. Like, they've become a contraction for all the wrong reasons. What's embarrassing?
It really
it's
is.
Embarrassing. I drove to Gastown. You know, the city's idea now of improving streets. And I don't know if you've gone through Gastown. Entering Gaston off Water, off Powell down to Water Street, or if you're coming off Granville Street onto Granville's main, off Granville Bridge onto Granville, the city's idea of good planning on our streets is to put giant concrete the things and divert, send traffic into one lane for no apparent reason.
No reason at all.
Granville Street, you come off the bridge and you go into, for no reason, into one lane, and so you create this bottleneck. And same on the other side, and in Gastown, they've got this. They create this triangle thing with a bunch of ugly concrete that pushes traffic into a traffic jam. Polling the show's traffic, people aren't as upset about it as I think I am, but you know, I just think that what is going on? Where's our money going?
Well, I know a lot of it's going to making signs that nobody has time to read, because you're not allowed to look at your phone when you're driving because that's super dangerous, but apparently having 7,000 freaking signs everywhere. I want an accounting of how many signs every time I leave the city, and it really is Vancouver.
Yeah.
And the farther I go away, the fewer signs there are. Like, there's
West Van
has more.
They have a lot of signs.
Okay, I don't spend a lot of time in West Van because you don't kind of go through West Van.
No.
But I mean,
if you walk along the beach, it's like, don't walk here, don't walk there, you know, this and that. You're like, oh my God, so I got to read so many signs. You're ruining the view.
But it's almost like you can't tell where to park anymore because there's so many signs that
intentionally, but you get a ticket.
Oh, I do. I got a ticket.
I thought it said nope, but yes to park. What?
How did I pay the meter? How did the meter take my money? And then I got a ticket and got towed. Oh, because I didn't read the red sign that's up higher.
You literally, on the app, put a code in of the meter, and then you pay. Why am I able to do that? Are you telling me digitally you can't track it? So it says, sorry, you can't park here? Come on. And the other thing.
Honestly,
going. On Strata, we do. I'm on the Strata Council, and every couple of years, we have to do a sign. We're obsessing about signs here. A sign. Yeah. Go through the building. I want to see, because for some magical reason, signs just start appearing. It drives me crazy. Like, what is this sign that literally over the garbage can saying, you know, something like recycling's over there? Like, well, okay, it's like, it's really, we need a sign for that? Come on. Things like that. Don't leave garbage on the floor. Well, I mean, people who do that don't read signs. They don't care.
Right. Don't care. So that takes us back to the, why can't we just have our, well, this is a soda water, but imagine this was a cocktail of some sort, taking this to the beach. And they're like, well, if we let people drink at the beach, drinking at the beach. I'm like, people are already drinking at the beach. And the people that you're trying to stop by making a rule about it will not listen to your rule. Like, come on. We just, as a city, we're not growing up enough to manage. It's like flooding the zone. That, going back to my original point, it feels like the zone is being flooded right now. Mm-hmm. There are too many candidates. There are too many motions. There's too much spin. There's not enough focus on the basic needs of any municipality. Like, it's mm-hmm. a honestly, it's a failure. I love this city. I'm born and raised in this town. I love it. I love it. But when I look back at the old Vancouver, you know, photos from way back machine,
Mark,
I pine for it, though. But I pine for the simplicity of once we what we once had. I still have people texting me and DMing me about the pool, saying, please tell me that you're never giving up on opening the pool. That's a perfect beacon of light, though.
Don't worry.
To, how can we take
a pool?
Right. Right. But how do we take something so simple as open the pool and turn it into something that caused, I don't even know how many hours of BS in park board and city hall at the provincial level. Oh, pool. Like, clean up the garbage in the streets. Let's have festivals.
It's a porthole.
Yeah.
Make the sidewalks even.
Make the sidewalks even, George. Why is it so hard?
We sound like a couple old farts.
Well, I kind of get why old farts were like old farts when I was young, going, why you got your knickers in a knot so much there, old man? But I mean, the simplest of things can't be done. Let's talk about on a larger scale in Canada. You know, we no longer have measles in check. Like, what is happening?
Because of spin, misinformation and spin from the people who took one stupid article from 1987 or whatever it was. The guy who wrote it says, you know, I was wrong in that stupid article. Now,
he went to jail for it. He lied purposefully about it. And he made it all the way to Jenny McCarthy sitting on Oprah's couch blaming the MMR vaccine for her son's autism, which has been completely debunked.
Yeah.
It is not a thing. But now it's been spun into politics. If you vaccinate your child with the MMR vaccine because it's 60 different things, no, it's absolutely not. You want to know what happened before people had vaccines for smallpox and measles and polio? People died when they were 40. People are living to be 80. Because of vaccines, you bunch of numpties. It's so frustrating. And little innocent babies are going to get sick and die.
Yeah.
And people who can't have vaccines are going to get sick and die because of your dumb politics. Like,
yeah,
I'm sorry, but it's ridiculous spin. It's bullshit.
There's a great clip of Neil deGrasse Tyson. He's always talking with this. You know, he's an astronomer. What is he, an astronomer or whatever he is?
Astrophysicist.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And he's freaking awesome.
I didn't say astrologist, at least.
No, you didn't.
So he's always saying, you know what the average age of the death was in, 10,000 years ago or whatever? 35. You know what the average age of death was in 1885? 35. What's the average age of death 100 years later since we came up with vaccinations and the science and medical systems? 80 to 85. I wonder what happened over the last 150 years. Oh, science. Science.
It's wild. There's no end of it. I mean, we'll get to the U.S. in a minute and talk more about that. But let's talk about what Prime Minister Mark Carney did today in Terrace, B.C., made the announcement of the next fast-tracked major infrastructure projects in Canada. I kind of feel like this man is moving mountains. He is busy, you know.
Pierre Poilievre is things.
Well, I mean, and he's traveling around and making some deals. I did see a couple of, I saw one major liquor company yesterday announced that they're moving their production facility from the U.S. to Canada because of the tariffs that the U.S. is putting on them and things. Right. They're like, you know what? Moving north. Like, I understand that there are industries like softwood lumber and steel and the auto industry that are absolutely knee on the neck. Right. Mm-hmm. Like that's the strategy of the U.S. president. I understand that. I'm not making that less. But the things that it feels like the prime minister is doing is everything else that he can. Right. While hopefully getting some kind of conversation going with anybody in the United States about how Canada used to be their number one trading partner. But
yeah,
it's wild.
A premier in BC that wants to stop all these things. And
it's wild.
A growing base of the protest of the ocean, protected oceans, you know, where, you know, no tankers and all that stuff. Those people are building up their opposition. And you know, they in the question and answer part of the press conference today, he was, you know, trying to address that, but, you know, about the process. And he says, well, we're still going to consult with everybody. I mean, okay, good luck. I mean, that's it's tough. It's just it's almost impossible to get anything approved because, and all these people who want
Let's
to
just
live
tell
in a
people,
prosperous
let's tell
live in a,
people
they
the
want to live in
two.
a prosperous country, but they don't want to do anything that actually helps us be prosperous. I
Right.
don't know
Let's
how that works.
tell people about the two things. So there's two. There's one LNG project and there's one hydroelectrical northern project as well. So it's about moving resources. And there are a number of them across the country as well. And for the interest of time, we'll just focus on British Columbia here, as you said, like the having the premier being like, yeah, no. But the First Nations involved, the two nations that would be impacted by these two projects in a meaningful way are on side with them, and they're being vocal. And I shout out to the, I raise my hands to the nations. My opinion on, protecting the environment versus moving resources is an aside here. What I'm seeing is there is a collaboration to try and protect the Canadian economy in the way that you have been saying since all of this started with tariffs and trade wars and Trump and all of that. The revving up of the Protect the Oceans people, we remember, if you're old enough like us, Exxon Valdez and that absolute horrific oil spill that, devastated the coast from Alaska down here for decades. Things have changed when it comes to tankers and how protective they are in terms of, in regulations and just the structure of the tanker. Like there's a lot about it. And the vocal group of people trying to say, we're not moving these resources out of Canada should probably hit the map that shows you just how many tankers are moving around the planet at any given time. It's astonishing. So as you say, and I will totally give you full credit for this, George, you say it all the time, we need to get out of our own way. We need to protect. Obviously, we need to be mindful. We need to be collaborative.
Course.
We need to protect the environment. We need to not just bulldoze through everything. However, we got to move. We got to move.
China, which extracts a lot and exports a lot and does a lot of, but all is heading towards becoming the greenest economy and greenest country in the world.
Yeah, I was just there and it was shockingly
They
clean,
because they go,
shockingly
well, sure,
electrified.
let's do some solar power. Let's do some hydro. But solar power is huge, and of course nuclear power. But solar power, they up in their northern territories where they have huge deserts, and they put these giant wind and solar farms, and generating enough power to. And they've found ways to make it travel, which is kind of what this northern electrical thing is. How do we? Because power as you tra as it travels diminishes, right? Electrical power. And so China's actually found a way to kind of get it to a station, then boost it up again, and get it to a station, boost it out again. So there's the technology that they found to get electricity from the middle of nowhere into the big cities is revolutionary. Because we are a country that benefits from mostly hydropower, but we getting it to other places is the hard part. So how do we transport it? And that's what that one project is transporting electrical power. It's really hard. It's not just put up a wire, because it diminishes as it travels along those wires. So you have to find a solution for that. So it's a big deal, and it's something that we have, and we have access to these resources that can generate a clean electric power. But we also have, dirty resources too. But we are ethical as a country. We are a safe place. We are a democracy. We believe in doing things properly and legally. We have a legal system that we all respect. This is unusual nowadays, I'm afraid,
Isn't
in the
it?
world. And I think that's a good sales job. And the Prime Minister has been using that, and I think he should. And that book, Ethical Oil, came out years ago. And that's what this is. How do we, what, where else are you going to choose your resources from? Why not Canada? We do it ethically. We try to work with all the different groups to make sure it's done properly. A bit slower, makes it a bit more expensive, but at least we're reliable. And that's the sales job that we need to focus on, not only to external resources, but internally, saying to the environmental groups who just want nothing, they don't, like, no, leave it in the ground, which is impossible. Then you will have no health care.
No.
You will have no nothing. You'll have nothing.
We got
You'll
to
be
catch
the
up.
part. You'll be the 51st state.
Yeah.
So you
We
have
got to
to
catch up.
accept the pros and cons of the fact that our economy is based on resources.
Natural resources.
And celebrate that we do it in such an ethical way.
I agree with you. I agree with you on that. And listen, I'm a tree hugger. I am. But I also understand, you know, there's a fine line between, you know, logging in a way that clear cut. I remember when clear cutting went wild in this province. I remember for the first time I flew over clear cuts and I was like, what is happening? It was unbelievable. And that is why I think there's a number of well-meaning people who are twitchy at the concept of trusting any politician because somebody's making money somewhere, which is, you know, but it's like, this isn't one of those, we're going to ram this through because it's a money maker. It's like, we're going to move this forward quickly because our country's economy counts on it.
Mm-hmm.
And we're in a different position. And you, like you said about China, yes, it's like unbelievably green. Yes, it's like the transportation. They fund everybody's brain trust, like the hive mentality, to get everybody working towards solving one problem. And then once that problem is solved, they buy that. Not like, hey, can we buy it from you? They just do, right? Yeah. Like, they're also building through people's homes. Like, they're not asking you if you maybe would mind if we build this here. They're like, yeah, you're out. They built a highway around this one guy's house. It was really quite something. It's a tourist attraction now, in fact, because he's like literally in the middle. He's like the middle of an 8-lane highway. It's wild.
I think I read someone's book about that once.
Oh, did you?
I feel like there was a book when we were kids that had about the guy. It was a house that he refused to move, and then they built a city around him or something. And
yeah, it's kind of like that one character home down on Pacific Boulevard there that's got the two huge towers beside that little yellow house.
Yeah, well, that's the oldest house in Vancouver.
Yeah. They're like, no, thank you. We will continue. Just as we talked about Prime Minister Carney and what he's doing, and I just, you know, people can fill the comments below about, oh, you're a libtard, whatever. I'm just really proud to have somebody with his knowledge and his grace representing us on the world stage wherever he goes. Canada is being well received. I think we're building a new respect in the face of a big bully coming after us. And when I look at Pierre Poilievre, who a year and a half ago, everybody was like, he's up 30 points. He's going to be the next prime minister. And now he hasn't changed his messaging at all. He's still coming for the guy in a way that's like, wow, okay. I mean, politically, the spin on that, George, like, what do you see when you look at the way Pierre Poilievre is positioning himself politically now?
I can't tell the difference sometimes of what they do on this hour has 22 minutes and what's going on in real life.
Thank you. I thought I was losing my mind because it's true.
Yeah, it's the guy, I forget the actor's name on this hour, but he does a very good Poilievre. I just think, you know, you lose your riding, you lose the election, you're in denial. And, you know, I know we have a lot of Poilievre and a lot of conservatives who listen to us.
Sure.
A lot, you know.
But I feel for them. And I felt frustrated by the Liberal government that wasn't doing the job.
Yeah.
Like, you're allowed to be a frustrated member of society, tax-paying Canadian. Yeah. Whatever your political stripe might be. I look at BC conservatives with the upheaval, like, we haven't even touched on that. Like, is there anything new on John Rustad? Like, it's actually been a pretty quiet week.
I guess you could say I was wrong. You can say that today.
Yeah, you did. You did say within a week he'd be out.
But the letters came in within a week telling him to step down. So I was
close.
That's true. So that's kind of like your toast. You've got 10 riding association people saying you're done.
Yeah,
he's not coming back from this. He's like Poilievre. He's in denial, and you know, so and I'm not. It's not. I'm not. I'm not criticizing either of them politically. It's just the way it works. It works in politics, and you just got to know when to go.
Right. You did say that about Trudeau as well. You're like, he's done. He's got to go. He's got
Gordon Campbell stayed one right. year too long. If he left and didn't run again, he would be seen in a very positive way. Instead, he's the guy who brought in HST, a very good tax, without consultation. And that's when people hate him for that. And now
everybody blew it up.
History, right? So it's like.
Right. Speaking of negative and in denial and wow, what's happening south of the border? The government shutdown comes to an end. The Democrats get nothing for 43 days of shutting it down. By that was wild. They totally, after winning the off-cycle elections on a Tuesday, they completely gave like less than a week later. It was really weird. And then the Epstein stuff that's going nuclear. Like, what do you?
Yeah. Well, the budget, the shutdown, they must have done polling and show that the pushback was getting stronger. They couldn't, you know, people weren't getting paid. And the spin that it was their fault was working.
But only six of them
party caved. And the president in power, who's obviously a great communicator, even though you may not like the way he communicates.
Yep.
He's very effective in making people go, yeah. Talking about the spinmeister. So, you know, I think they must have seen the writing on the wall that it was just going to get worse for them. And they did that, they had those victories, which is good. And so that's a win. But yeah, they didn't get much. But the Epstein stuff, it's horrible, all of it, but it's still not sticking to Trump. It's still not. As much as you can try, the messaging was, well, shoot, this proves that he wasn't involved. That's their messaging.
Unbelievable. I want those files released because I want to see everybody. There are 1,000 victims, young girls raped by wealthy men, probably more.
Yeah.
And some of them, the people that we might look as heroes and idolize on both sides of the political spectrum and across the globe.
I want to know. Have I told you the story? I was invited to a party. Every election when I was in office, there was this one person who would have a party at his house. And, you know, it was a fundraising party. So I would go, but I was always like, this is it. And you'd go there. And one time I went, each time I went, but the first time I went, I didn't really know this guy, but you know, he raised some money and, you know, in politics, that's what, you know, raising funds, you go to these things and
yeah.
Anyways, we were there. And then suddenly there was a fashion show of these women. And I'm like, what in the world is happening here? And so I just said, bye, I'm out of here.
Yeah,
like,
see ya.
This is not, no thanks. I got out of there as fast as I possibly could because this is not, this is something beyond what I know.
Right.
You're
something adjacent.
Theory in my mind, but
yeah.
You know, I'm like, no, I don't need my photo in this situation. I don't know who these people are. I don't know what's going on here. This is a fundraiser. Why is there a fashion show with these young women? It's weird. Weird. But
is that person still around?
What's that?
Is that person still around?
Mm-hmm.
Fundraising?
Probably, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was just an interesting experience.
No kidding.
I was there at another party. And I was before I was in politics. I will never say who it was, and I left, and I wasn't in politics, but there was a couple of politicians there, local politicians, and there was a naked woman lying on the table, and there was a lot of cocaine at this point. And there was plates of food on her. This is Vancouver. And I was like, okay, bye.
Yeah, like, no.
It was like, wow.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I just... And it's the naming of the names part, right? Because people are the victims not naming the names? Can you imagine? Well,
everybody gets invited to these things. Doesn't matter what party you're in. That's the thing. The names are so let's say this in a micro level, that there was a list that this guy, whatever. And it turns out, you know, I had a list and I was at one of his parties. But I left because I thought this is not cool. Nothing happened. There was nothing that I saw, but I was there. I was on a list. So now, am I guilty of attending a party that something maybe happened that I don't think it did?
What about on the other side of that coin, right? So I understand that there are people who are going to be caught up in having their name. So like Richard Branson is named, and Bill mm-hmm. Clinton is named, and Donald Trump is named, and right, like named doesn't mean necessarily. It's allegations.
Which is what
bystanderism or whatnot. But if it's like Then you start doing the investigative part. Like, this is why journalists matter. This is why media matters. Like, real hardworking, hard-nosed journalists who break these stories, right? The reason why, like, why did Jeffrey Epstein get the sweetheart deal? The fact that one reporter in Florida continued to dig even after he was released, that ultimately unearthed what has Ghislaine Maxwell in jail, now in a country club jail because the president moved her to one, you know, like... When you start to, the web starts to get exposed, even in the emails that were released yesterday, we're doing this on Thursday, it was on Wednesday yesterday, that a handful of emails were released. And within the communications that were private communications between Jeffrey Epstein and Michael Wolff, so the guy that does, you know, the books about the inner workings and behind the scenes of politics, right? Wouldn't necessarily call him a journalist as much as he's a writer. Apparently knew a whole bunch of this stuff. It's like, well, apparently Trump's going to be asked something. So what if you, if he doesn't say anything, you can hold that over him. And that's some currency for you. It's like, if there are 100,000 of those documents, I don't think people are going to, it's kind of like Diddy's parties. Like we know that Beyonce was at Diddy's parties. Is anybody looking at Beyonce and saying she was abusing people? No. So the people that did nothing wrong should fear nothing. Mm-hmm. That's kind of how I come at it. It's like, we're not going to not talk about it because somebody like you who attended a party might be like have a hard day trying to explain, like, I went to that party and then I left. I saw cocaine there. I saw that person there. I saw that person there. And then I left. Mm-hmm. And you had nothing to hide. So if you got nothing to hide, what would you worry about?
I don't think there were any minors or anything like that. But
right, right. You know, So moving away from your experience, hey, listen, I've been at parties where naked women that were painted had sushi all the way down their arm. Yeah. There was a time when that was like a that was provocative.
Arts groups did that.
It was very provocative. It was painted bodies.
Because I know the event you're talking about.
I did not partake in said sushi. There was no cocaine at the party I was at, but I guess I didn't get invited to that part of the party. I'm too square for that. Whatever. Hey, we're over time and you have a heart out at 2. It's 1:59. We got to go. You can follow us along. So much more to talk about, George, but we had to do a big debrief. Sorry I wasn't available last week, so we crammed it all into this week. Follow George at George_Affleck on your social media, which is Twitter. I'm never calling it the other thing. George Affleck on all other platforms. I'm at Jody Vance, Jody with a Y. Please call me a libtard in the comments when you like and subscribe below. I'm allowed to like whichever politicians or dislike whichever politicians I like. It doesn't make it.
We don't judge here.
Oh, people will judge in the comments, and I'm going to be here for it. See you later, George.
Bye.
Bye.